Jones, he married Mabel, a wise old owl was he. He told his wife he never drank a stronger thing than tea. But after honeymooning, at night he stayed away. And for a week he never got home till the break of day. At last poor Mabel asked the reason why. Said Jones, I'm going to tell the truth or die.
Hello and welcome back to our podcast, but a fanfic about a fanfic. Self is a synthesis of Fallout, the popular game about a post-apocalyptic wasteland, and My Little Pony, a popular show about pastel horses. Hi, I'm Fi, I'm joined once again with my co-host, Weird. Say hello, Weird.
You're pretty loose tongue for a civilian. That is Officer Weirdington.
Alright, Officer Weirdington.
Now, what's this here? You've got some sort of a podcast? You got your license for that, son?
I think my license and registration is my other podcast.
That won't do. You're going to have to take a recap of the previous episode.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's your job. But yeah, first of all, hi, folks. Back again. Apparently, we're still doing this. We're episode 48, chapter 53. We're getting there, folks. We're getting real close. We're actually getting real close to the anniversary of this podcast, which is wild to think about, that we've almost been doing
completely
this
completely insane.
Yes.
Completely insane.
But yeah.
We're mad.
This is weird. Oh, we're gonna go mad for sure by the time we get through book five. We're gonna hollow out. But first of all, we should just jump right into the recap this week.
I am not looking forward to this episode because too much happened last episode. Last episode was our second good episode, which has been a long time coming since all the way back BJ meets a completely different set of temporary companions for a day.
I mean, I liked the end of the book one a lot too. That was a thing.
The big fight in the and rumor, like a little bit of rumor mill. We've been told by an anonymous source that it's very possible that the massive change in tone and quality might be due to a ghostwriter.
Yes.
An extremely plausible hypothesis, I have to say. Like, I don't know what else could explain.
Well, ghostwriting does happen from time to time in even, like, famous books. It's not that shocking. It is just kind of funny, though, that, like, it's like, oh, cool, the only times we like this book is the times when you're not writing it.
Yeah. Let's see here. I'm trying to remember how it... we start... talking to the Fallen's mother.
Yes.
Who has a lot of ara-ara energy, who is extremely anime MILF. There's a lot of talking, a lot of her reminiscing about her adventuring days until eventually she lays her cards out on the table. Oh, by the way, did you think that I hadn't formed morally bankrupt organization? Who do you think is responsible for the new and upgraded putty patrollers that you've been dealing with all this time? And
I was Lord Zed the whole time.
What is even her name?
Glory's mother? It's Dawn.
Yeah, Dawn. Dawn threatens the small town with a tank. Blackjack is wildly out of character in finally pointing out, like, yeah, something sensible of, like, hey, your goals are not, like, you're clearly up to wrong. Like, if it's this easy for you to, like, threaten an entire town of helpless, like, civilians and children with a tank, then, like, I can't trust you with the MacGuffin. you are inevitably only going to do worse with it. The standoff is broken by the rest of the crew finally showing up to lend a hand in trying to fight off the tank and fight off the anti-armor rifle snipers.
Yes.
In the hills. Nazis show up and are inexplicably helpful, whereas, like, Confederate combat doctrine would be to, like, just kill everyone. Oh, there's some sort of disturbance near our base. Level it. leave nothing alive.
Kill them all, like, God sort them out. That's that thing.
But these are good Nazis. It all comes to a head with, it turns out, incredibly inexplicably, Deus, there was enough preserved organic matter to plug his brain into another thing.
Enough delicious Deus meat.
What, like, useful, like, meat, like, that, yeah, I don't know. I don't know how his think meats managed to get all the way, there. But yeah, his think meats are plugged into this tank. Turns out, Dawn, just under her skin, was, a, 40K Skeleman. I can't remember what they're
Necron?
Called.
Necron?
Necron. The Skelemans. radioactive Skeleman.
Radioactive Skeletons.
She was a Skeleton Warrior!
Skeleton Warrior!
Who ultimately retreats. I'll look at you next time. And so we end with a lot of dead harbingers, and fucking Deus is back.
Yep. Now in tank form.
Yeah.
Both going for the same joke.
Dawn remains Rainbow Dash, but on the plus side, like, she also has all the powers of Rainbow Dash. So that's
She has all, like, she is really silly. She has all of the strengths of Rainbow Dash and none of the weaknesses.
And yeah, I think that more or less sums it up. This time there's not much. I listened to a little bit of the our previous episode to try and catch up and didn't notice anything that needs to be So the record time for in the recap.
It's gonna be a fast one.
I guess now tell us all about how they spend the entire chapter with their hooves up their asses. Fi, because that's yep. The pattern.
Yep.
Stuff happened last time. We've got
for those unaware of the pattern of the story, is every single action chapter comes with a cooldown chapter. So that's where we're sitting at. Usually, like, the pattern is the pattern sort of advertised is supposed to be action mystery, action mystery, action mystery, but since none of us give a shit about the mystery, it's action filler, action filler, action filler, sometimes filler 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 filler, maybe some action, which was what happened, like, with the previous one. But anyways, vamping aside, chapter 53, upgrade. So we smash cut immediately into the thick of it. It turns into a medical drama for a little while. Like, Gloria basically, like, swoops into the medical, the Fluttershy Medical Center with her father, who had been, like, gored by Dawn, obviously, and is like, I need everything you've got. And everyone's like, hold on, you can't do that. This is a hospital. And she's like, fuck you. This is a hospital. I'm taking control of it. And, like, it just turns into, like, a goofy medical, like, medical situation for a while. Glory, like,
sounds pretty great. I mean, I'm here for it. Glory remembers that she's been a doctor this entire time.
Yes.
That's a pretty great change of pace from...
it does come across a bit silly, though, of, like, Glory basically yelling at everyone and telling them what to do, but I am here for Glory finally having a fucking spine for once. But BJ and the crew don't really have anything to do while this is happening. She's just, like, in and out of medical things. BJ... If you remember, BJ had, like, pulled her legs, her front legs out of their sockets by trying to wrench open the tank, because Ghost of the Shell just happened. So she just kind of has to sit there and do nothing while she gets, like, waits to get repaired. They chat a little bit with the other enclavers that are there, because they're just like, something big's going down and we don't know what it is, and you know, all the radio channels are going wild saying that Operation Cauterize is happening. And Operation Cauterize is a big plot point that happens from the original story. It's when the Enclave decide to, like, invade the surface, essentially, for their resources, and paint it as being, like, a, like, What's the word for it when a imperialist nation invades a country for its own sake, with air quotes?
Regime change or spreading democracy, or there's a couple terms like.
But yeah, they're doing that. They're saving the
liberation.
Waste. Yeah, liberation. Yeah, they're liberating the waste from itself. That's currently happening in the original story because we're getting really, really close to the canonical ending of the of Fall of Equestria. So a lot of big things are happening while this is occurring. BJ and Glory get like a little like quiet time for because like BJ's trying to get Glory to settle down because she's starting to run herself haggard. Because you know Glory's one of those characters that can't like deal with the idea of like stuff like their father dying, like that kind of sort of traumatic event, and is trying to like throw herself into saving him, kind of the same way that she tried to do with BJ, and is like trying to like get her to like accept the reality that he might just, you know, die, which is really funny to me to consider because it's like one of the things was like, BJ, you're full of like cybernetics and was brought back from the dead, like they might be able to do that for him, but like it's just really just a thing of like he's not a main character, so he can die. is the way this kind of came across to me. you don't get it, Glory. He doesn't have the main character tag. He can actually die.
This is a cinematic. Phoenix Down just won't work.
God, yeah. Yeah, BJ basically has nothing to do with this chapter because she is laid out for the entirety of it. Oh, man. Oh, I forgot we're getting to this plot point right away, too. So, we find out that, like, Scotch got a hold of the Delta Pip Buck, which is the, like, BJ's, like, magic pip buck that has the Maltese.exe on it, and she's been, like, wearing it, I guess, for some reason. I don't really understand why, but she just is wearing it for the time being. And, like, BJ and Scotch have, like, Scotch, like, you know, pulls her over, and she's like, I need to talk to you, and, like, BJ's like, okay, what is it? And it's like, oh, you know, it's nothing. I just, like, a weird skeleton horse is in the peripheral of my vision. It's kind of terrifying. Maybe he's a little like, oh, yeah, the pit buck does that. That's the dealer. That's or as we've affectionately dubbed him as Skeleton Horse.
Or Nihilist Clippy.
Yes.
Wait a minute. So I my brain skipped a beat. Who's complaining about Nihilist Clippy?
Scotch tape. Scotch. She's wearing the pip buck right now, so she can see dealer. And God, this is one of those plot points that just hit me like a truck when I saw it. Like not from like shock, but just like, oh God, this is stupid. But like, you know, they're discussing about it, and Scotch is like, he's like, well, like that's the weird thing is like, I recognize this character, and BJ's like, that's not possible. He's a weird skeleton horse. and she's like, no. See, I remember it from this thing, and like I don't know why they had these on them, but she like produces the character sheets for the Deadlands tabletop game that they
Jesus
found.
Oh, Jesus Christ! God damn it, Nihilist Clippy! You fucking loser!
And she's like, here, it's this character, Smiling Jack. And they like look at, because of course it's the character sheet. It's got like a bunch of information on it, including the person who's playing the character. And we find out it's Echo, one of the Macintosh's marauders. Bum, bum, bum.
God fucking damn it.
All right. We'll deal with this more in a second, but I just really want to like... Because I'm going to get mad about this later, but I really just want to laugh over the fact that Echo has been LARPing through this entire story.
Fucking loser. God damn it. it's bad enough, I don't know. No, it's awful that, like, this is actually, a person, and that, like, man, oh man, what a dingus.
Yeah, I think it's especially funny too because I recognize the name Smiling Jack because I've been playing Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines a lot, and I dug into it, and it's like the only instance I can find of the usage of the name Smiling Jack is a character from Vampire the Masquerade, which just makes me laugh a lot. Like, it's just like it's not even like an original character. Like he's been LARPing as a skeleton horse based off of a fake vampire.
I mean, he's also clearly based off of like if it's a Wild West RPG.
Well, it's Deadlands. It's literally Deadlands.
Yeah, yeah. Wait, is that's what it's called? Or
it's called the Wastelands, but like the contents of the story is a
it still counts as ersatz. Like,
yeah, it's a weird west, but it's literally Deadlands. Like it's just Deadlands with another name. Sorry, go ahead.
It's killing me that I'm at a loss for it, and I'm looking through like my fucking books for it, but yeah, no, he's also clearly an ersatz version of like the sort of marquee big bad spooky boy of Deadlands who appears on the cover of the book. And man, yeah, this is fucking sad.
Like it's just it's so nerdy, like it's such a dorky
it'd be bad enough. Except that this character is like taking themselves so goddamn seriously.
Yes.
And been looking down their nose at other people for like trying to do things. And like this motherfucker, I wish I could trust Sombra to be self-aware enough. I don't know, get the joke of this dude going on and on about his nihilistic worldview and
yeah, like his holier than thou tone.
Yeah, and how Blackjack is almost morally obliged to give up, and yet here he like all the while in fucking cosplay as his favorite spooky boy as the coolest villain in the whole story. The like he's super unbeatable. Only like a high level party can like really like even take him on. And even then, you have to have the bullet that originally killed him on the battlefield of the Civil War. Okay.
Yeah,
so
like
what
I was.
Happens next?
I was gonna. I'm gonna dive into this a bit more. Like there's a really early chapter on where I talked about like when we eventually learn the identity of the dealer. It'll be like really like profoundly stupid and ironic that he like ever says anything to anybody ever, like that he has any legs to stand on about anything. But yeah, Rover shows up being the only character I like still. Actually, I still like Dawn. I like Dawn as a bad guy, but whatever. Rover shows up and is making fun of BJ because, like, he you know, he's put her back together multiple times at this point and keeps making the joke about, like, he's like assessing like the damage. He's like, oh, I can't figure out what's wrong with her. Like, oh, it could be this. It could be this. Maybe she's just a dumb idiot who keeps breaking herself. And also Triage is there, who's one of the like two different like near identical nihilistic doctors that I don't care for.
Fuck.
And they're talking about like options about what to do with her. And despite her being broken and BJ, they're basically like, yeah, you've put more stress on these limbs than we like ever thought was possible. Like we were like, okay, here's some legs, they'll be fine. And then you got yourself into a fist fight with a tank on a regular basis. So our next step option is we need to give you like proper combat limbs because like that was a detail that like never not, like that like didn't come up before that like it has come up before but whatever that the
it's come up before and this is a retcon.
No, it's not a retcon. It's I haven't brought it up before is what I meant, that the limbs are not combat specific, they're scout limbs. Like they specifically describe it as a scout technology. Like it's not designed for like open engagement in firefights. I just like it just hasn't like come up yet to bring it up.
Last I recall, she's made mostly out of Deus parts, and not a scout rig.
No, her internal parts are mostly made out of Deus. It's the legs are scavenged off of a scout robot. I just didn't, like, the details have never mattered up until this point to go into. So yeah, now she has to get some cool upgrades, and they're like, okay, well, what are we going to upgrade you into? It's like, well, we have all this Enclave power armor around now, so we're going to build your legs out of Enclave limbs. With her big, like, there's a kind of moment of panic about the idea of, like, them slowly turning her more into Deus, and she doesn't want to get rid of any of her meat parts, so they settle on just giving her, like, legs, essentially, and doing some minor upgrades to make those legs work better. But because it's going to be a long operation and we can't show that, guess what time it is? Time for more memory orbs!
Great.
Yay!
Great.
So they medically donk her on the head. But before that, they establish, okay, but first of all, you owe us, like, we need you to do things for us. So we get a couple of new side quests that get tallied onto our pre-existing roster of storylines. I don't remember what the fuck Grimhoof is. I wrote it down in my notes and I immediately forgot what it was. But Rover needs them to go to a place called Grimhoof for some reason. And Triage, wants to be more independent, wants more independent food operation. They want to sever themselves from the society as a dependent. And the only way they can do that is they need, like, some sort of space-age farming technology, because food is notoriously hard to grow in the Hoof because of enervation. So they need to go hit up this, like, underground plantation to salvage some of the farm tech from it. So when I say farm tech, like, my brain, I mean, just thinking, like, we have invented this space-age technology, a tractor, you know, because they're horses. yeah. That aside, they get BJ gets donked in the head for maybe one of the most mind-bogglingly convenient memory orbs we've seen in a long time. Like, I was discussing this with somebody about, like, how, like, memory orbs are really weird and silly, because the bulk of them that exist are supposed to be are supposed to be counterintelligence, essentially. Like, a lot of them are supposed to be, like, taken from interrogations from zebras about confessing to various crimes and shit, because, you know, they were an interrogation tool. Because the story, like, because of the way they're done in the story, most of them are, like, really important secrets, and it doesn't make sense in the story why a person would remove this memory and have it recorded for future generations to observe. In a lot of cases, like, it just simply doesn't make any sense why that would happen. Or how it would end up in the Hoof in the first place. But anyways, here we go. So we're transported back to the past in the body of a character named Diamond Flash, who runs Flash Industries, which was the place that the Flash Phillies held up in the present, which had all the crazy light-based technology and the holograms. And she's showing off, like, she's doing, like, a tech demo for some investors. And I would not bring this up if it was not critically important that you need to know what a phage shield is, but they show off this new... She invented hard light shields that basically could be equipped to anybody, and she also invented a kind of laser that could go through her own shields, because the idea is to proprietize her own solutions to her own technology, I guess. But she does the whole demonstration and then realizes that, like, I don't know, it's very confusing, but she's surprised to find out that, like, the person she's showing off the tech demo isn't the person she thought it was, and instead it's Mr. Horse, who is the guy who there's a lot of catch up I have to do in some of these chapters, but he's the guy who inevitably takes over the OIA after Golden Blood was disposed for treason. And he's based off a character in New Vegas, which is Mr. House, who himself is based off of Howard Hughes, who was a weird eccentric billionaire. Horse's generic evil capitalist, but, like, for whatever reason in this story, despite the character he's based off of being a hyper-intelligent super genius, Horse in this story is, like, a weird, like, craven, manipulative creep for some reason. But I guess the reason why that is because Golden Blood is already the super special, like, Aristos.
Oh, boy.
the self-made billionaire is, of course, like, nouveau riche, and therefore, like, a joke.
I don't know, man. Like it's... Yeah, that seems like the more likely view. Like, if you want it to be real charitable, like, maybe Somber, like, is being slightly more self-aware and is depicting a horse, Steve Jobs, Edison, Musk, take your pick, supposed genius. Like every genius billionaire or super millionaire of a previous age you've ever heard of was a fucking grifter who like parasitized the hard work of dozens of engineers and stuck their name on it. And you know what? Let's give Somber an unworthy benefit of the doubt and say that well, except that Golden Blood is precisely that.
Yeah, I was going to say Golden Blood exists.
And so is fucking Zordon here. Like,
yeah. So. Well, my point was going to be that I think Horse is just meant to be the bad kind of capitalist as opposed to Golden Blood being the good kind. Because, like, he's such a joke. Like, I was about to go into it, but he's here with his robot girlfriend. Like, Horse is a super weird creep that's really obsessed with one of the characters from the original show named Sweetie Belle, who's an adult in this story. It's complicated, but whatever. And she's like a famous singer, so he made a robot that is their exact likeness, so that he could date her, because he was that obsessed with her. And like that's a reference to the fact that in the original story of New Vegas, House has a Marilyn Monroe robot. Even still, it still comes across as really petty and creepy to be like, look at the bad capitalist. He's so weird. He has a robot girlfriend. Isn't he a loser? But, like, God. I don't know. Everything about House is silly. But he's, like, he's basically, like, I want to. He showed up to Diamond Flash because he's, like, I want you to join my Avengers initiative. So I'm getting together a bunch of smarty pants people to figure out something. I got a new technology that's going to literally end the war. So we get they go to like some weird building. It's like it's a surface elevator that takes them deep underground. I believe it's actually the elevator that they used like way back when they went through the microwave hallway, like the black slate hallway that like eats souls. When the like elevator they got to that took them out of the underground. Like I believe it's the same elevator. Because they are definitely going down to that area. But he's like, I'm going to show you something. And they're like, he shows off like star metal. And he's like, all right, so this is star metal. They talk about all of its qualities. And he's like, okay, but we figured out something interesting about it. And we think that, like, we hypothesize that it's not really even really metal. It's like a material that's just stuck in a particular alloy. It's super complicated bullshit that I'm only really bringing up because... Again, it's super critical to the final plot. Like a lot, like this memory orb is inexplicably super important to the conclusion of this story. He's like, okay, I'm going to show you something. It takes him to this weird spherical building that has like this. It's got some weird like non-Euclidean structure inside of it. And he's like, here's where we hypothesize is the source of all star metal. We call it the Tokomere. I think that's how you say it. Though the zebras call it the Eater of Souls. We found it deep beneath the hoof. And he's like, here's my scientist. There's a really weird thing about this that, like, also speaks really poorly of Sombra's judgment. That, like, one of your main bad guys, like, he shows up with, like, a weirdly super multiculturally diverse set of scientists that are trying to crack the code of this thing. Which is just really silly to have, like, in your thing, but it's for a point that's stupid anyways. But oh, whatever.
No. I'm not looking forward to that.
I'll get to it in a hot second, but yeah, it's called the Tokomere because it's named after its discoverer who has a Japanese name because he's from Nippon, which is spelt like horse nay because this setting has horse Japan.
Yeah, kill me. kill me with a brick.
And I don't remember any of the other names of any of the other scientists that are brought there, but they're all like ones from Pony Russia, ones from Pony France. I believe France is fancy, which is a deep cut. Stalingrad. There's a couple others, but I don't remember the other ones. But the only one that's
Uncle,
really...
I've had enough.
Yeah. The only one that's super important is... it's like, oh, and also we have this zebra named Amadi, who's here too, and he's an expert on this stuff. And his aesthetics are really cool in the sense that he's like, he's a zebra, but he's also like head to toe covered in like swirling tattoos, which if this wasn't like a big yikes of like creepy tribalism bullshit, it'd be kind of cool to have it. Like, it's cool to think about like a weird, cool zebra man who's just like covered in crazy... crazy swirling black and white tattoos in addition to his already existing stripes, but it's
a Kaladesh zebra. Extremely nerdy reference. Deep
Looks like I would also cosplay as Jasper Stone in my digital recreation of my fucking dead ass soul trapped as a Clippy in it.
Apparently. But that name is extremely important. I could not remember where we got this character's name, because there's a later reveal where it goes, it's you, and it uses this character's name, and I was baffled by it, because it expects you to remember a detail buried in a memory orb literally 20 chapters later, literally thousands of, like hundreds of thousands of words later. You're supposed to remember that this character's name was Amadi. But he talks about like the dangers of using it, because he's like, just because that's what his character is to be like, oh, it's dangerous, and they just go, ah, oh, pish posh, your weird religion, man from the dark continent, like it's so tone deaf to do this, but they do a thing which they like, they're convinced the Tokomere can end wars, because. It's important to remember that, for the most part, the zebra equestrian crisis is mostly a resource war, and they figure out a thing they can do to the Tokomere to make it basically produce, and they produce a signal, and it like reverberates that signal and generates electricity. And if they can like find a way to like maintain that signal indefinitely, they can essentially generate infinite electricity from it, thus solving the war. But. The sequence is so goofy. What are you laughing at? You're right there. You want to share with the class, or should I just press on?
Nah, it's just press on. It's just, all right. I'm just overwhelmed by the general dumbness of it. I don't even remember. Like, I
he's just, what the fuck is happening? But yeah, whatever. We get the key to ending the war that apparently didn't happen. But yeah, Blackjack wakes up from that. They tease a little bit of the idea that she's way more robotic now. We don't get the full description for a little bit. But the thing that it really hammers home is that like BJ still has like fingers, like robo fingers, but they just aren't working for some reason in her new robo limbs. And Rover's really frustrated by that. I don't know, like, I don't understand why you would even make, like, why you would even nerf having hands in your character. Like, it's already so dissonantly weird, like, realistically what it should have been is, like, no, we gave you more hands, like...
You have become death, destroyer of worlds. We've put in so many more hands.
Like, yeah, her just her hooves just like split open into two sets of them that have two sets of hands on each.
Ashura Modu.
Just nothing but hands. We've made your new limbs entirely the hands. Think of all the grabbing you can do.
I'm just having flashbacks to like the series finale episode of Steven Universe, wherein like the team takes their final form, and the animation crew like sort of fucks with the audience by like, okay, so we don't see the final form all at once, but like a couple sets of hands cross by the screen, and there's a pause, and then several more hands.
that's good stuff. But yeah, BJ and Glory reconvene, and like this is a scene that I would like more if I didn't know where it was going. But, like, Gloria is talking about, like, how, like, her, like, their relationship is kind of, like, really, like, tense because, like, Glory can't really, like, keep being her emotional support, like, pillow anymore because it's just too much to bear. But she doesn't want to be, like, she doesn't want to be, like, abandoned by her either. Which, like, the thing is that, like, I would totally be down for that kind of, like, thing. Like, it's like, no, realistically, Blackjack is a very, like, would be a very difficult person to be in a relationship with. She's very, very self-destructive, and that is very, like, painful to be, like, to be in a relationship with. But also not wanting to, like, completely abandon them is also, like, an instinct that is hard to, like, to get away from. But the problem is that, like, realistically, all this really is because we are setting up for the Blackjack and 21 relationship. So Glory has to be, like, slowly edited out of the picture over time, which is just deeply frustrating to me. Effectively, we have already hit the climax of their relationship, and it's all downhill from here. And Glory is slowly being considered less and less a realistic partner for BJ, which it doesn't matter to me if people don't care about that. It's something that just genuinely bothers me in this story. Like, it's a big problem I have with this story, is that Glory is considered like a lesser relationship by the story. And even though this story goes out of its way to make it clear that, oh no, Blackjack loves both of them equally, the story doesn't tell that story.
Look, honey, I was honestly really only into you for your crippling neuroses and your biscuits and gravy accent. and now that like you're super obsessed with rad stunts and Capri Sun, I just don't think it'll work out.
you change once you start wearing your hair backwards. I don't think I can love the new you. But even still,
also, you're very blue, and that's a turn off.
But 21 is also blue. No, it's the wrong kind of blue. You're a light blue. He's a dark blue. It would never work.
Blue on a girl is just just not a good look.
Oh man! But they still have makeup sex anyways, because the story is just like that, and they're in a relationship, but the relationship is now it's set to the complicated status, which if it was explored better, I would be more interested in. But whatever.
I'm still like sort of I continue to reel. Like it's incredibly alarming that these characters have sex, especially because like I'm trying to think what the nearest equivalent would be. Like your boyfriend is turned into Abraham Lincoln, like an exact like clone of Abraham Lincoln, and then you still go to bed together. Like
yeah, kind of.
And also he doms you super hard.
Yeah.
Like with a collar and everything. Like, oh, well, I mean, it's celebrity, but I'm,
Yeah, it's very surreal.
I mean, actually, even more like a founding father. Like Benjamin Franklin, like you're, like Benjamin Franklin or Thomas Jefferson in bed.
With a bridal whip.
Yeah. It's just you'd think it'd be kind of a distressing scenario.
I mean, yeah, a little bit. Like, this story just doesn't have the, like, capacity to handle the fact that, no, Black, like, Glory is just a Rainbow Dash now. Like, it never, it's never...
Never really comes to terms with that. Never really, like...
So it's just funny whenever you... Meaningfully
explore some of
that. It's just funny whenever you think about it. It just makes me laugh. There's just something innately comical about just, like, oh, I'm Rainbow Dash now. Whoops. I don't want to talk about this next part. Can we just close the episode here? Okay.
I was very tempted to give you permission, but
no, we got to press on. Sky Striker is also a stable. We don't really care whether he lived or died. It wouldn't have really added anything to the story. He's been in literally two scenes before this, so But anyways, we get everything interrupted by Rampage showing up and being like, oh, I also, shit, I forgot to scratch. It's not really that big of a deal, but like we do get a proper description of what Blackjack actually looks like. Blackjack V2, or I guess V3, Robotics V2, whatever. For simplicity, I'm going to say V2. Instead of having like the all white porcelain limbs, she has the like dark black of the Enclave. But great. Like the way it's described just sounds really funny to me because like it's basically that she just decided to wear the like legs of a power armor. That's what her legs look like now, and she also has a reinforced spine, so she like has the cool like the thing that everyone always draws her of. Like there's a ton of fan art of Blackjack as a cyborg because of course there is, but they always draw her with the like cybernetic spine. Even in her original form, but like that's just wrong. She has a cyber spine in the second V2. Just to clear that up for like the four fans that actually have read Project Horizons that listen to this podcast. And she also has like it's supposed to be like a metal like basically like a metal collar around her chest that like reinforces her limbs. But it just kind of sounds like she has a cow catcher on her now. Because it's like, oh, she just has like a plate of metal on the front of her.
Hilarious.
it's just really funny to think about for me. Just BJ just has a cow catcher now. But yeah, anyways, Rampage shows up. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh no, the black sleeves from like a hoofed waffen uniform brought to mind specific lyric from Rob Zombie's Living Dead Girl, and then it occurred to me, hey, wait a minute, she is a Living Dead Girl, and like, hey, wait a minute, fuck, this kind of sucks, like, the constant having to go into, like, for repairs when she's, like, an undead abomination, couldn't we have some cool, like, zombie junkyard cyborg that, like, oh, she fucked up her legs. We need them repaired. Oh, what's happening to them? Like, well, oh no, they're coming back together, but they're like, oh, they seem functional, but also wrong. We could have had that, but oh well. Cowcatcher it is.
I think it's
Cowcatcher and Nazi sleeves.
Yeah. Well, they're not even sleeves of a uniform. It's like she has like the power armor, so yeah. It's like she has giant like, and because because Enclave or power armor is like designed to look like an insect. So she has, like, very, like, chitinous... Oh, I guess I love this. Shit. Because she has, like, black chitinous, like, armor pieces now. Oops.
I'm imagining mantis forelegs on a horse. Robotic mantis-like claws.
Yes. Excellent. Oops. God, I wish Blackjack didn't suck. So I could just, like, unironically just gush over how much I like this design. But anyways, yeah, Deus shows up. Rampage is like, ah, yeah, Deus is coming. And they set up, like, he might be might go to blast them. 21 sets up another anti-tank mine ready to blast them if they do anything. My notes here is literally just Deus is back and it sucks. Because Blackjack, of course, does the thing that Blackjack does. To the point where they even someone loses a bet over it. That's like, well, I'm going to go talk to him. So she goes out and tries to talk to the tank, and it doesn't blast her, luckily, because now, like, now it is what it is. And, like, because he can't talk, and he can only, like, communicate through through pantomime and engine noises. So you get a lot of, like, Blackjack talking to a tank, and it making, like, it doing the thing where it, like, moves the gun barrel up and down or left and right for yes and no. Which, like, if it was more self-aware, would be way more comical instead of trying to treat this like a serious situation.
Oh my god. This is sending me... This is like, I'm...
Well, like, because there's
my eyes went completely unfocused when you were saying, like, I just... I was elsewhere. Like, oh my god. Oh my god.
What is this story? Because Blackjack, like, no, just actually just, like, has a conversation with him. And is trying to figure out, like, why is he back? Oh, God, I hate this. There's a specific line that I really extra hate. Because we have gone into full Deus rehabilitation mode, where She's like, no, I'm going to start calling him Doof now because that was his real name. And like, there's a line that makes me hate Sombra more than I have in a long time where Rampage is like yelling about all the bad things that Deus has done. And she's like, you're pulling a Brass, which Brass was the person that like got tricked with air quotes Deus into raping Twist in the first place. So directly invoking like the person that
Rampage killer.
Yeah, just killer.
Kill both.
Killer.
Kill them both.
It's one of those moments of like, oh cool, the writer really just thinks this is okay. That's cool. This is also a return, a glorious return of 21, the stud who is always right. Cause while she's doing this, 21 has been like hooking up explosives to the tank and also like removing the like kill switch that the Harbingers had set up. Cause he's basically like, he just yells at everyone and is like, he's like, Blackjack might trust you, but that doesn't mean I trust you. And if even the slightest chance of you doing anything bad will kill you right away. And like, which would be fine, but then the story just takes a second to stop and talk about how cool he is for like manning up. And it's like very like, cool, this is what I needed. A really stereotypical like posturing masculinity. That's what I needed in my story about lesbian robot horses. Because we need to set up that 21 actually has like attractive qualities, because Sombra has no idea what a woman would see in a man at all. Cause we've established this a long time ago. Like
Girl brains are hard. Yeah.
Girl brains are hard. So he doesn't know why someone would find 21 attractive. And to reiterate, I don't know why anyone would find 21 attractive either, except for maybe as like a super bitchy bottom. That'd be about the only thing I could see him as.
Not even a bratty bottom, because he doesn't have that much willpower.
I don't know. I think he has extreme make-me energy, but that's just me. I could definitely see that. 21 is a twink, confirmed. But this story goes really out of its way to make it seem like he's a cool guy for doing this and not kind of, like, obnoxious and annoying. But there is, like, a really funny kind of meta line that I enjoyed, where, like, because they're, like, trying to figure out, like, well, like, why is he doing this, though? Like, why is he trying to help us? And, like, And Rampage is like, BJ, this is what everybody does. Every time you beat somebody, they don't know what to do with themselves, so the best they can do is follow you around until they figure it out. Which is just kind of like playing its hand a little too much, that like half the people that are her friends now tried to like kill her. Which would be fine if it's not being done so constantly, like so consistently. Yeah, Rampage, Psycho Shy, and Deus now have all been characters that BJ has beaten, and they've become friends.
When did BJ beat Rampage? Was following around well before, like.
Well, she was following was, around like, under her. under. She was initially under like Big Daddy's like charge to do it, and then after like BJ had like shot her in the head a couple of times and like beat her, essentially, she decided to follow her for realsies. Because that was a big thing in book three that was like, it was a plot point that was moving so fast you could have easily missed it. That like a lot of it was Rampage trying to figure out her place in life and trying to decide like why she's following Blackjack, even though she has no reason to anymore. And I think the story wants to tell you that she's ultimately come to the decision that she wants to because BJ is a good person and she wants to follow in her example. But it's also established the shitty side plot about Rampage getting her memories back and having to observe them as well.
The only meaningful defeat I can remember, like, was like a team effort, and it was ultimately the Fallen with a mega cannon that like.
No, there's a couple of times sort of where
meaningful defeat. Like,
there's been a couple of times where BJ has just unloaded into Rampage's head to stop her from being a serial killer for a second.
Okay.
It became such a non-issue that it was just, it became a slapstick moment of just like, Rampage is acting up again, blow her head off, you know, audience clap, but whatever. Regardless of what we think, the story thinks that Rampage has been beaten by BJ.
Okay. Like, all right. Yeah, no, let's move on. Even like
Now we're having a dream sequence. Because...
No, I still do have to say, like, oh man, I'm such a badass, I shot Deadpool in the head. Deadpool doesn't care? And like, since when does, like, is that even an impediment? For?
There's also a really, there's a, I think part of it too is that we're supposed to be, we're supposed to know as an audience that Blackjack could kill Rampage, like, indefinitely, I guess, if she wanted to. Which is, the evidence for that is a really, like...
Could she?
Well, the evidence of that is in a really, is like the most tenuous, like, nonsense, but it's supposed to be an example of this, is during the time that the entire chapter that we skipped, where she's in a dreamscape, part of that being in that dreamscape is killing all of her friends at one point, and her way of killing Rampage was essentially, like, because Rampage, can't God, I don't even really want to talk about this, but there's a bit where she kills Rampage through a door frame so that her head regenerates around it, and because her brain can't completely regenerate properly, she's just like trapped in a perpetual state of like in a door frame. It was like
okay,
it's like, I don't even really want to, like,
so dumb, and it's so much really just lessens Rampage as a primordial terror that, like,
yeah, that BJ could apparently beat her. Like okay, like, that, no joke. No, like, no joke, though, the way that the story is written, Blackjack is unbeatable. Like, there is no one in her cat or her friends that could top her in terms of fighting skill, including Rampage. Like, Rampage may be 200 years worth of experience, but Blackjack is just better than her. You don't have to believe it, you just have to believe the story believes it.
It makes me feel sick inside. So, what happens next?
Then we have a dream sequence, because Somber doesn't know how to end scenes, so BJ just, like, goes to sleep. BJ dreams of being Som again. We get a really, really long dream sequence that can basically be summarized as... Som was assassinating heads of state under the orders, which he believed to be the orders of Luna directly, because it was an operation to, like, fuck over the, like, to stop, like, to, it was an executive order that was basically like, in the event that the government has become too corrupt to sustain itself, Operation Party Pooper would go into effect and eliminate, like, all the ministry mayors. So that's part of what Som was trying to do, because she killed Pinkie Pie. And was trying to kill Rainbow Dash. We find out that that order was faked by a different person named Garnet, who gets killed by Som by the end of this scene, so who cares? But we get this really, like, dodgy line that I find really frustrating, where she says that, like, oh yeah, this was Golden Blood's plan from the get-go, that, like, we were never meant to win the war. We were just supposed to, like, let the war kill off all the government, and then swoop in and establish the New World Order. Just to really hammer home that, like, Golden Blood was also the secret head of the Deep State.
Sure thing.
Yeah. It's not really that big of a deal. It's just really annoying. It's more annoying, like, Golden Blood propping up that, like... No, of course he was already also planning on completely usurping the entire government. Like, of course he was doing that. It was all from the... All according to Keikaku.
Translator note, Keikaku means plan.
Yes.
Plan means cake.
You could go for some cake right about now. My notes
just
say...
Let's stop the podcast and get some cake. Let's give ourselves a cake break.
I'm laughing at my notes again, but I literally just wrote, Echo fucking sucks, to remind myself of this. Because BJ, like, actually decides to deal with the dealer and, like, figure out what's going on with him. Because she, like, puts the Delta bug back in her, and Dealer's like, oh, so now you know the truth. Well, not really. It's actually just, so I know who you are now. I know you're Echo. And he's like, yeah, I didn't want to be Echo anymore because Echo was a coward. And it's this whole thing where, like, Echo, like, the thing it's trying to establish that I would feel way more for if I gave even the slightest shit about the Marauders. But Echo was their comms officer, of course, because it's, you know, an ironic name. But his whole thing was he was more or less there for all of the other tragedies that happened, that befell the Marauders. Like he was there pretty much every single time something bad was happening, and he watched all of his friends like fall apart in front of him because of the tragedies of war. Which, you know, I would feel sympathy for to a certain degree if A, I cared about the Marauders, and also this next sentence was that I'm about to say didn't happen either. And he's like, you know, it's like, oh, we were the best of them, and then we were all broken, and it was if it wasn't only for the fucking stars, and we get like a BJ's like, wait, what do you mean stars? And it's like, oh, you know, just your typical zebra curse shit. And I was just infuriated by this plot detail, so greatly and utterly, like I can't even like. I just threw my hands up in disgust and my eyes rolled all the way up back into my skull. Cause he's like, oh yeah, before we joined up with the military, me and all of my friends were at like a carnival or circus. Which one?
And we all made a wish on the Zoltar machine.
Yes.
You have been cursed with a curse. Yeah. Got on the bad side of Eartha Kitt in a shawl. Yeah, cursed for 1,000 years.
They fucking.
So they're totally like wild zombies that were once human beings, and
they went to the circus, or they went to the carnival or whatever, and like. They had a zebra fortune teller approach them. It was like, oh, I can tell you your future. And I'm just like, I was just taken aback by the fact that like zebras are also Romani in this. Like, that's super cool. Sure. But she's like, oh, I can tell you your futures and I can make sure you succeed in all the things you do. And then all of them are like, oh, you know, this probably seems like a good idea. Let's all go for it. And then I like double taked and my eyes rolled even further into my skull when she produced a small black book and started like, and she's like, oh, I can do magic with this. So listeners who have read the story, you know what this black book is if you've read Fallen Equestria. I've talked about this before, but there's the black book. The black book is a book of necromantic spells and dark magic. There is two very important details about this. Is that there is supposed to be one in existence, and it's supposed to be at this point either in Rarity's custody in the Zebra Ghetto, or it's back in the Zebra Homelands. There is literally no way this character could have possession of this book. There just simply is no way. But we know in
particular. Don't you disrespect me, little man! Don't you denigrate or deride! You're in my world now, not your world. And I've got friends on the other side.
Oh, God.
That's just Necco, gentlemen. Just a little something we have here in Louisiana. A little parlor trick. Don't worry. Sit down at my table. Put your minds at ease.
Oh, it's so bad. But it's just like, it's holy shit. Bad. That, like. This fucking zebra.
I got voodoo, I got a voodoo, I got things I ain't even tried, and I got friends on the other side.
Oh, you're really going for it. But she curses them with black magic, so that as long as they all remain friends, they will succeed at everything they do. And for a while, that was great, because all of them got into the special forces and all did all sorts of cool badass shit. But then, you know, Doof raped Twist, and that broke the entire friendship, as you'd assume. Actually, I think specifically, I think actually what was considered the actual like catalyst moment, the moment of doom, was the fact that McIntosh was assassinated, or he wasn't assassinated, he took a bullet for Celestia, and that broke the rest of the Marauders, and apparently the spell, because the loophole of someone being dead, I guess, but...
Can't be friends post-mortem, I guess, that's...
Oh, it's just...
That's a hell of a double... That's a hell of an agent to, like, I'm trying to, like...
Like, I was discussing this with people before about, like, one of the frustrating things about this story, because we're almost close to the end, we're about to get there, but one of the things I find really frustrating with the story is the story seems obsessed with explaining things rather than just letting things be thematic. Like, it's very easy to just take it on its face that the reason why all of them broke up as friends is because, broadly speaking, Fall Equestria is about, like, the dissolution of friends and the destructive nature that has to the story, since this fucking thing it's based off of is literally called Friendship is Magic, and the whole theme of that is friends can solve every problem. So that taken to its logical inversion is that the, like, if you're not friends anymore, it makes everything way, way worse. And that's how we got into the, like, post-apocalyptic wasteland, and the whole thing is it's land friendship forgotten and all that shit. Instead of just letting that thematically be, like, sit there and be interesting, it instead, like, needs to explain, no, silly friend, it was not a thematic decision, it was a zebra curse.
Voodoo curse!
God.
They were cursed with a curse!
Oh, man.
I hope you're satisfied, but if you ain't, don't blame me. You can blame my friends on the other side. You got what you wanted.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
But you lost what you had. I can't handle it. I can't.
Yeah, we're almost done. Okay. We're almost done. I got one last.
All right, yeah. Get us to the fucking finish line.
A scene I don't understand how we're seeing it, but I'm assuming Blackjack is just connected enough to the goddess that she can just start seeing things the goddess is doing. But the goddess apparently has the bright idea that she wants to team up with the Enclave now, and so we get a scene of, like, the goddess, like, sending Alicorns over to the Enclave, and is like, I hear you're having civil war issues. I've decided to help you. And here I've sent you legions of Alicorns to help as well. Which I don't understand why this scene is in here. I assume it's meant to ratchet up tension. But if you've read the original story, you know how this goes down. This seems to just be a thing that's completely written, made up by PH, that, like, she tried to team up with the winning side, essentially, until everything went to shit. And we know this isn't true, which means that there's no way that this can mean really anything in the broader scheme of the story, and it doesn't add anything to just have this, like, increase in tension that she's working with the other bad guys now. Like, ooh, scary, all your villains are teaming up. But these aren't even your villains, they're villains from the Fall Equestria. I don't know, I think a friend of the show made a good point that this could have just gone off the deep end and went, I'm rewriting everything now. I'm making my own story entirely and just, like, completely rewriting the ending could have just happened very easily with this. I don't necessarily think that's the case because I don't think that, like, I don't think Sombra has the stones to, like, break the unspoken rule of fan fiction that you never uncanonize things. You only ever, like...
I mean, yeah, so far he's been pretty imprisoned by it. Like,
yeah.
To the point that I, like, broke into laughing, like, last week or so by the degree to which he is, like, prisoner to this thing that he tries to want to imagine that he is superior to.
So, I don't necessarily think that it's the case, but it's still funny to think about the idea that, like, no, I'm making my own story with Blackjack and hookers, and then, like, no, I'm gonna retcon your story. It's my story now, and I made it better. It definitely is within Sombra's character, but yeah, that's the end of our chapter, is the, like, cliffhanger of everything potentially getting worse. So, do you got anything else you'd want to bring up before we go there.
What's that sound? Oh, it's the mailbag!
Yes, it's our weirdly tinking noise mailbag. Our mailbag that makes crinkly noise.
It's brought in by the mailbot. All right, so this letter is addressed to Betcha Too. I can send you guys an email.
Yes.
Which is a reference to that time that I got real snotty. Really reverse psychology. And it worked, I guess. I should like taunt the audience more in the future.
But before we get into that, where would you send emails to if you wanted to call our bluff?
Send to weirdingtonesq@gmail.com. Should you have the fortitude?
I bet you
can't. Anyway, this question, we've got three questions in a larger email sent to us by Alyssa K.
Thanks, Alyssa K.
And the full email reads, "Hey guys, first things first, I want to both thank and curse you." Oh no! We know how bad those are! I want to both thank and curse you for doing this thing. Having read the original on GDocs, well, most of the original, apparently I hit the ejector seat really close to the end, there have been more times than I can count where I facepalmed and groaned. Gods, I forgot about that. I'm also very happy to be able to revisit this stuff from a less impressionable perspective, let's say. There were ellipses there that I was performatively... I remember feeling very much like Phi did with this fic, in that I was both super frustrated with the fic for being so bad, but at the same time, unable to articulate why. Editorial note, that's why I'm here, and why I'm so fantastic. I really don't believe it. Anyway, I am not 100% caught up with the pod yet. As I write, I still have about 20 minutes left in chapter 51. But there were a few things I wanted to say / ask. Number one, what do you do between podisodes to keep your sanity? Or I guess a better question would be, do you have a post-pod conversation about the crap you just logged through as a cooldown thing? And let's go ahead and address these as they come. So question number one, do we have a cooldown?
Yeah, I think we usually do. Usually, as I get everything together to get editing, we usually chat a bit about, like, you know, the strengths and weaknesses of a given episode, or just stupid shit that happened in it that we sort of reeled from.
Yeah, I think that the main thing we discuss is stuff that, like, I at least kind of feel is unpod-worthy, which is the main topic of conversation is often what either of us would want to see instead.
Yeah,
like how it could have been different, which is something that we occasionally do on the pod, but I'm opposed to it sort of broadly, philosophically.
Yeah, same. This isn't meant to be like a fix-it podcast. It's just meant to be like a lot more of a review. Because I think you get into some pretty uninteresting territory when you start talking about like what you might have done when you haven't even made the, like, when you didn't.
Yeah, this isn't a fanfic. Yeah, that's so that's the main thing we talk about after. It's important to note we also do a warm up. A lot of pods for like think that their warm-ups are so clever they include them in the actual ep, but we like catch up on what our weeks have been like and like what we've been thinking about and doing and just generally catch up as people and as friends before we get the recording ritual underway, which involves synchronizing our pressing of the record buttons, a clap test, a moment of silence to help cover the filter, the noise filter.
But yeah, in general, we try to keep too much like off topic talk off of the podcast as we can, because it's very easy to get, it's very easy to just instantly double your podcast length by just having a catch up.
All right, segment. Number two, I know you guys went over a bunch of wrestling terminology back in chapter 30, whatever, while talking about Sanguine, and the and he'll hear, probably he'll turn. One term I heard you guys use is jobber or jobbing for, and I don't think I remember your explaining it. Might be if it gets explained by the time you see this. So a jobber, essentially, it's so in wrestling, you've got your stars, your name talent, and you've got people really gunning to be that. To get the notice of management and eventually become a headliner, like putting in the work as Stone Cold, like putting in the hours, doing your time as Stone Cold Steve Austin had put it. But then there are people who are just here to collect a paycheck.
Yeah, like the name is literal. Like you're literally just it's a job. It's a job for you. You are a jobber.
So during the late 90s, early 2000s, the Attitude Era, which came after an event of legend and myth called the Montreal Screwjob, a lot of the business became part of the kayfab. And so even though a lot of people didn't know what the fuck he was talking about, and like, If you were in school, if you were a school-aged lad in America, in the circa late 90s, early aughts, you might have heard young men accuse each other of being jabronis. And without any context, besides the fact that The Rock called somebody that, and it sounded like real mean.
Yeah, it sounded like a slur. It kind of sounds like an insult or a slur. But, like, not one you've ever heard of.
Yeah, it sounds like an Italian slur. Like, it sounds like some sort of, like, unpleasant sausage. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so when The Rock says, "Know your role, jabroni," he's telling his opponent, he is stating that you are not a named act.
Yes.
You are not a named character in this promotion. Don't act like you can challenge me. The all-time greatest sports entertainment legend,
yeah.
The Rock,
and the act of jobbing in fiction is a little bit more simplistic. It's a little bit less codified. It's usually just means person who is meant to lose to make the hero look good. Like the other like similar terms are like mooks or zeku or numpties or I don't know. Kobolds, like just things that are designed to get knocked down to make the heroes look cool.
I would argue that the ultimate example of a jobber is in virtually every like battle anime you have ever seen. If you've seen any sample size of anime at all, there will always be like the first henchman that approaches the heroes will be this great big jacket, like this house sized pile of muscle and dumb. Twice as strong as an ox and half as smart. And they will be given a name and they will be framed as like part of the important like inner circle of bad guys. But the like small lithe twink protagonist will one shot them.
Yeah, they'll go down like a stone.
Crush them. Yeah.
To show off how cool they are.
And their name will never be spoken again.
And the term, like, jobbing, like, to someone is somewhat pejorative, somewhat derisive. Usually when I use it very derisively to like, talk about the like, artifice of the writing. Usually what it means is, like, a character who, like, is built as very, very strong. Like a great example that we can use from the original from this story, let alone, is Deus. Deus is a great example of someone jobbing out to Blackjack. Deus is set up to be this big, giant, super dumb, invincible tank, and then he's knocked over with very little effort.
You know what? I disagree. The Zodiacs are jobbers.
Yeah, I suppose.
Deus is more of a mid-card monster.
Yeah, Deus
is a headline act. Like, and he shows up again later. Like, so like, how the concept of jobber translates from wrestling to fiction is that in a wrestling promotion, You have all of these stars, you have these name-lined acts, and you want them to all be pushed. That is to say, like, put over. Like, you mm-hmm. want the audience to read all of them, like, all of your name talent as big deals. And so, in order to do that, they've got to beat somebody.
Yeah.
And if like, the more your named name-line actors, your name performers, like, lose in matches, like, I mean, that hurts their heat, that hurts their build-up. So you got to have chaff in there. You've got to have, like, nameless jabronis. You gotta have big, tough-looking dudes. Like, maybe, like, have them walk into the ring and tear a phone book in half. But, like, their name is forgettable. Like, their gimmick is it doesn't matter. They exist as a warm body for somebody with a name, part of your top tier roster to get put over.
Yeah, I would still make the case that in stories, at least, jobbing is usually something done by a character who is set up to be particularly strong or, like, is strong, and then due to the nature.
But they never win a fight. Like Deus did. Deus was put over by beating the gun.
Yeah. Honestly, almost make that case for Rampage. Like, Rampage is basically the Worf of this story.
Yeah, yeah. Rampage is like we actually talked about it on the pod before. Rampage is totally a Worf / Wolverine. She's a member of the main roster, but she only exists she is a recurring jobber. She's there to as a perpetual, like, a named character who, like, sets up how tough the new baddie is. She's kind of a Krillin.
Yeah, a little bit. But I think that covers that question now. Jobber is a person who goes down to make the hero look good. Jobbing is a little bit more complicated.
And that's why we call it the Raider disease jobberitis, because it turns normal people, turns normal civilians, and even named roster into so much fodder, into tomato cans, and an inanimate object that splatters red stuff all over the place when you hit it.
Yeah.
All right. Number three. I completely forgot about Book Four's existence before listening to the pod to get to it. The whole story went from Hightower directly to what I see now in Book 5, which I'm super looking forward to hearing Weird lose his mind over. All the dumb anime BS that Sombra starts throwing in. Thanks a lot, Alyssa K. I'm so happy to be of service to you. That's not really a question so much as an observation. So, moving on to the end of the letter. I wish I could have helped avert Meteor X. Editorializing, I've more or less given it, like, I'm really surprised I managed to keep my holding pattern, I stopped referring to Meteor X because, like, the reality of it was just too grim. So Lisa K says, I wish I could have helped avert Meteor X, but unfortunately Spotify doesn't really have a thumb, heart, star, horseshoe, clover, blue moon for podcasts. Any specific place I could help you guys most other than iTunes? No iTunes account, sorry. That one is a question, but it's not numbered. So can you think of anything? Because, like,
We're directly on Podbean, but basically, like, any other, like, podcatchers would also probably help quite a bit. Yeah. It is a shame that, like, the primary way that, like, you can help us is, like, iTunes reviews is, like, the number one way to help out a podcast, because it puts it into puts it into the orbit of more people that way. Even just, like, recommending it to your other friends would also be, like, super useful.
That's what I was about to say. Do you have a social media? Do you have any of it? Do you have a Facebooks, a Tumblrs, a Twitters, a Mastodon?
That would also help greatly. But
anything but Gab. If you have a Gab account, stop listening now.
But yeah, you can. Yeah, definitely word of mouth, I think, is the most valuable. But second to that is iTunes reviews, and third to that is, like, yeah, Podbean is where we're hosted, and that helps a lot to, like, give us reviews and stuff like that there.
There's a bunch of episodes still up on YouTube, I think.
Yeah, I need to get on uploading more of those. I've just been behind because, like, admittedly, this is, as much as this is a project that I love, this isn't the only thing I do with my life, so it's just kind of like falling.
Oh, you can you can see our neat fun K-fab faces, our avatars on the YouTube. All right, so back to Lisa K's letter. Keep up the awesome, insane work you guys are doing, and hopefully you'll still be relatively sane enough after slogging through this garbage fire to do another thing. Having you guys as my morning drive is one of the best things. Oh. Don't know how to close out emails. Signed, Alyssa K.
Rad. So thanks a lot, Alyssa K. That's awesome. You're our first, like, proper email. I feel way more legitimate now. Like, I feel like a real podcast now. now we just need, like, a Squarespace or a Casper Beds or a... and we'll be a real podcast.
Well, I bet no one else out there has the guts, has the fortitude, has the moral strength to email us at weirdingtonesq@gmail.com.
Yeah.
Or tagging us on Twitter at the incredibly not safe for work, Thou Art Fi.
Yes.
At Thou Art Fi or at weirdingtone, wherein I have been more incendiary than ever calling libs monsters, like, twice. I called Obama a monster after seeing that video wherein I'd heard the story, but, like, I didn't know that it had been recorded, like, that it was real, like, in the heat of the Flint water crisis, President Barack Obama went down to Flint and at a speech, like, in his opening, like, you know, coughed into his hand and said, I'm thirsty. I could use a glass of water. And the entire crowd went, no, what? No, get him a bottle of water. And an aide came up with a glass of water that, unbeknownst to the audience, was actually from Air Force One, was handed off to Obama, wherein he drank it in front of a crowd full of people from Flint, Michigan, giving them the impression through omission that it was a glass of water from the tap in Flint, Michigan, to assure them that their water was fine, so that they would be poisoned.
Yes. And on that really dour note, I think we should play us out, though.
The presidency of Barack Obama was a terrible mistake.
But I couldn't come home in the dark.